Adam Morrison here. When it comes to top-tier contracting, my go-to choice is McGilvery Environmental. They're not just any contractor. They're the best in Spokane and North Idaho. With years of experience, they handle it all. New construction, meticulous repairs, and asphalt overlays. From start to finish, they ensure your project is completed with the highest quality end results. And here's the scoop for this year. McGilvery Environmental has expanded its services to include asphalt paving. That means top-notch commercial parking lots, residential driveways, and road construction. So, ready to kickstart your project? Reach out to Kip at McGilvery Environmental by calling 208-556-6384 for your free estimate. Don't forget to mention my name, Adam from the Perimeter, and experience the difference that McGilvery Environmental brings to the table. Again, that's 208-556-6384, McGilvery Environmental. My number one choice for all my contracting needs.
HDG Architecture is proud to be a sponsor of The Perimeter with Adam Morrison. There is another podcast that you all should be listening to, and it's called If Not Now, When? This podcast, which Josh Hsiang of HDG Architecture hosts, has a clear mission to ignite positive change within the Spokane community. On the podcast, Josh brings together diverse individuals from city officials, business owners, journalists, influencers, and big thinkers to have meaningful conversations about what we can do to help transform downtown Spokane into an even more vibrant and robust community. By talking to these movers and shakers, the podcast aims to inspire and empower its listeners by actively shaping their city's future. You can find the If Not Now, When podcast wherever you are listening to The Perimeter at, or you can find it in the description of this episode.
Welcome to The Perimeter, Season 3, Week 5, presented by McGilvery Environmental. Finally got the season started. I'm with Brendan, the producer. I thought it was a good atmosphere in there. Obviously, you go to the games as well. Yeah. Yale was a big-time opponent, considering for a home opener.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, it's not a team that went to the NCAA tournament. A team that's won 20-plus games. I think it was four of the last 6 years. You know, a very good club. From the Ivy League, but I thought it was a lively environment. And, you know, a quick backstory to why we played him this year. We were supposed to play him last year, but we got that Kentucky game. So the reason is we probably wanted to play him last year with the club that we had.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing against this year's guys, but I bet you few. They were scared for this game because Yale was good. And we saw that in the first, you know, probably 6-7 minutes. It was 16-6. But what was your thoughts on just the atmosphere and the excitement?
I thought the atmosphere was
really good.
Really, really, really good. The uniforms that they came out with were just so cool. Like those teal jerseys. I actually bought my first ever Gonzaga jersey because they were so freaking cool.
Sweet.
But yeah, it was a cool environment. Yeah, I was a little bit nervous at first when they came out to that 10-point lead. But then, I mean, then it just, everything got righted, and it was a much better, you know, second half, of the game, you know.
Yeah, I thought, you know, coming out slow was you know, normal for a new club as far as personnel-wise. And Yale was good, and a lot of teams come out, you know, super excited and have nothing to lose, that type of atmosphere, and then kind of everything regresses back to the mean. But I thought Yale, you know, did a good job of just being aggressive. We weren't aggressive on the defensive side in that first, you know, 6, 7, 8 minutes. But after that second media timeout, we really kind of took control. Mm. Now, before we get into the full breakdown of the game, we have to talk about, you know, Steele Venter's ACL injury that came up the night before or the day before.
Yeah.
After a press release. And I think some people were upset in the building because they don't know how it came out. It was a little bit, you know, scratching our head on who released it, that type of deal. That was the story I got.
Gonzaga.
It happened at practice, and nobody, it wasn't officially released from Gonzaga, I don't think, until later.
Oh.
So somebody, yeah.
leaked it.
Somebody, you know, tweeted it or called somebody, you know, from a new, which is fine. It's not like it's the damning information, but usually, you know, if it's a, something like that, they'd like to control a, who hears it and when, especially a night before a game, as messed up as it sounds.
Yeah.
But you want to just like not give away, like if you're, I don't know, you're starting wing.
It sounded like they didn't know if it was a torn ACL or not. It sounded, they said it just came out as a knee injury, and then later they updated it to a torn ACL. So maybe they're just trying to get the prognosis. Like.
Right. No, you're right. I mean, that's and maybe I'm over making an over dramatizer. How do you say that word? Over dramatic. Dramatized.
Dramatizer.
Yeah, I don't know why we can't say it. But yeah, I just was kind of curious to hear that part. But obviously a big blow for Gonzaga. Big Sky Player of the Year, had a good year last year for Eastern, can score the basketball, can stretch the floor, three-point threat. So, you know, you feel bad on that aspect, and then obviously the personal side is terrible just because, you know, going from Eastern to Gonzaga is a big jump. He's from Ellensburg, so he's a Washington kid. He's a local kid. Obviously, Gonzaga controls this state as far as hoops goes, and they have for 15, 20 years, you know. And so to get that rug pulled out underneath you the day before the season opener really sucks. And so hopefully, you know, everybody will help the kid out and make him feel good about himself and make sure that he's doing all right. Because I tore my ACL my second year in the preseason of my NBA career. And the hardest part is the first 2 weeks because you're told to let the swelling go down. So you do that, obviously. And then, like, you feel pretty good, like, a week after. Like, we saw him the other night. Like, he just walked with a limp. He had no crutches. You know what I'm saying? Like, you feel like you can, like, move. You just obviously can't go laterally.
Yeah.
So, like, you're kind of like frustrated because you're like, it's really not that big of a deal. And then also the, you know, the emotional and the mental part of it's really tough because you don't know where your career is going, how you're going to recover. Obviously the science is way better, but still your body reacts different to each, you know, and then you got to start talking about, well, do I do a patella or do I do a cadaver or do I do hamstring for the replacement? You know, so you start asking questions that you, as a young man, you're like, what? You know what I mean? Like health questions that you never really even thought about. You know, and then you start hearing the stories because people are going to talk to you about it because a lot of people have done it. It's like it really hurts right after you have the surgery. And then you do the, you know, the CPM machine, the constant progressive machine, where you put your knee and you lay in bed and it moves it the whole night, but you can't like turn your body.
So wow.
And it's to break up the scar tissue. And it's terrible, man. Like it sucks. Like, and I, when I did mine, it was give me every morphine you got. You know what I mean? Like it hurts, man. It just plain up. And then you do the, you go in and break up the scar tissue and they just, take your thumb.
Just massage the hell out of it, like deep tissue massage.
But just right on the scar, right on the scar, and they have to. So yeah, it's not fun. Obviously, I'm not saying anything that's profound, but like when people have never done it, it hurts worse than you think. And then, like I said, for a young man, just with, you know, excitement about moving to Gonzaga and all that stuff, it's just a bummer. So hopefully they can pick him up and he'll make a full recovery. He should get an extra year or, you know, so then you'll still have two after this. Because he's going to help us when he comes back next year of spacing the floor. You know, he's longer than he looks, makes shots. So that was a big time blow. But it also, you know, the silver lining of it is it gives Dusty Stromer like full carte blanche to start, and which I think is not a bad thing as well. High level recruit, we've already talked about him. I thought he looked impressive in the Yale game. He had eight, I think he was 2 for 4 at 8 points. But he's going to be the type of kid that just makes a lot of plays with his athleticism. And, you know, they won't always show up on the stat sheet. And then he'll get, you know, an opportunity to not have to like look over his shoulder, you know, and that's, that's easier to do as a young player. So that's the silver lining of it. So again, hopefully, if anybody knows Steele or whatever, reach out to him, make sure he's doing all right. It's not a fun time. I've done it, like I said. It's the 2 weeks after sucks because you're just waiting for surgery and you're just, it's not a good time.
The Perimeter will be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Our family is all over the place sometimes, but ICCU helps us keep up with them. We use card control to turn on Olive's debit card when she needs to pay for activities.
And turn it off when she's shopping online.
We make sure Forrest is depositing his lawn mowing checks into his college fund. And we definitely make sure to ask Grandma Ivy where all those Zelle transfers come from. Phew, that's a lot of keeping up. Ready for a break?
But getting back to the game, like I said, Yale started out 16-6, looked good, made some shots. We got a little bit stagnant offensively. You know, then we go into that second media timeout and then finally start making a run, start making a push. I thought Graham did okay early. I thought Yale's plan against him was fantastic. Every time he, because he's a back down, dribble, dribble, back down, they just sat on him as far as the help side defender or on the top side. So he really got bottled up. He didn't have space and made him uncomfortable. So they did a really good job, especially in the first half, of making him not, you know, productive as he could be. You know, he ended up the game 4-6, 3-4 from the free throw line, three rebounds, 11 points, but only played 19 minutes, got in foul trouble as well. So I'll be curious as the year progresses of how teams defend him, because they showed that that is a pretty good strategy to kind of slow him down, because he is a body bump, spin off, you know, contact, and then go to work. Well, you can sit on that. Now, to counter that, he needs to get lower, you know, lower touches and more angles and just go up, you know, early with a move. But I thought Yale did a good job of taking him kind of away. You know, he had a great LC State game, so they kind of obviously watched the tape, and I guarantee they watched Wyoming tape from years before, a couple years before, and seen how to defend him. Anton played fantastic, 3-4, 5-8 from the free throw line, 12 rebounds, 11 points, plus 13, two assists, two steals, typical. That's what he is.
Yeah.
And Huddy and I brought it up, and, you know, I'll bring it onto this show, like talking about lineups, you know, with Dusty. So you go, okay, who's going to be Dusty's backup now, since he was, quote unquote, probably going to be Steele's backup, but they probably would have played about the same minutes. Now Dusty's going to get a majority of that, but somebody's got to, you know, substitute for him at that three spot. So Huddy floated having Anton play the three a little bit and playing big with either Graham, Braden, or Ben Gregg inside. And I kind of see it, but I don't see how it's productive for Anton's game. And this is not a knock on his ability to shoot the ball and stuff like that, but I just don't think he's like good at the perimeter. He's more better around the basket. So I don't like that idea. You could do it in stretches, but I don't think it's like a long-term plan or something where you like steal 5 minutes a game for doing it. I like keeping him around the basket because he's just more productive that way. He figures out ways to score and be, you know. I like having either June or Luca be Dusty's substitute. June got a quick run, took an early shot. The first one was a good one. The second one was not a good one.
Got chewed out by Coach Few.
And rightfully so.
Yeah.
Like, the first one was an okay one because it was a drive and kick. And, okay, even though you just checked in the game, it's kind of one of those deals that just happens. Like, the ball came to you. It's like, oh, God, I got to shoot because it's the right basketball play. But the second one was a force. That ain't gonna fly with Coach Few. You better make that one. And you better make the next one after that, especially as a young newcomer that, you know, hasn't proved yourself at all. That didn't fly. So when he shot that, it was, we were not, you know, we are obviously right next to Coach View in the radio broadcast. We're 10 feet away, so I can usually kind of hear and read his lips pretty good. And he was not very happy. He was the things he was saying. And then he cussed under his breath, and he was, you know, cussing June out before he talked to him. And then when he got to him, he toned it down, but he was like, he literally was like, that's not your shot. And then he didn't play again.
Yeah.
Now then, Kronovich, right? Is that how you say
it? Yeah, I think that's how you say it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep messing that up. But Luca, I'm just going to call him Luca. I don't care. Only got a small stretch as well. So I'll be curious to see who plays that backup role at the perimeter position.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't be surprised if Fuey just figures out how to go to the two guards, Dusty, and then whoever for like a small stretch and just play those guys.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the minutes for the backcourt.
The
38 and 40, right?
Yeah. 30 and yeah, I mean, Ryan Nimhard did not.
3 seconds, yeah.
He came off the court for 3 seconds.
3 seconds at the end of the first half. Yeah. And then Nolan played 38 and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think Fuey's, we talked about, it's funny, we talked about all, you know, in the preview show and then on the broadcast, it's going to be one of the deepest teams and he's going to play a ton of guys and he's probably only going to play 7.
Yep.
Or 8, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to figure that out. And those two guards are going to play a ton. Dusty's going to, I mean, Dusty played 28 minutes in his opener.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to figure out how to keep him on the floor. He's going to score more as well. So yeah, I that's one of the remaining question marks, you know, as the season progresses is who plays that backup role. And to me, it's Luka or June. And I think Luka would be my choice just because I think he's 6'4". He's big enough. He's another ball handler. He's played professionally overseas. I think he's just more ready for the moment. So I would like to see that, but obviously Coach Few knows what he's doing. I just don't think June's ready for it. I just don't. Doesn't mean he can't get there. I just don't think he's like Rui when he first came over. He's like super talented, got the body, got the size, all that stuff. Just not ready.
Yeah, this kind of looks lost out there.
Just lost. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's not a knock, but it's just like, well, you need a year,
yeah.
Which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. So, you know, talking about our backcourt, you know, Nemhard goes 7 of 17 for 16, 7 assists, 1 turnover. Nolan Hickman, 7 of 18, 1 for 8 for 3, obviously not great.
Mm-hmm.
3 assists, 1 turnover. Here's the greatest stat is 10 assists, 2 turnovers, mm-hmm. 5 to 1. Obviously, that's fantastic for your backcourt, especially Ryan. Ryan started, I think, 1 for 6. Didn't he have an air ball, too? In the he was 1 for 6, had an air ball. It's like, ooh. But obviously, turned around, finished 7 of 17. What I like about his game so much, it's not just the scoring. Obviously, he can score, but he's always disorganizing the defense. He's always pushing the pace. He's always flattening the defense, and that's just so valuable. Mm-hmm. It's just like constant push, 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 push. That's going to help us, especially with a team that's not as dynamic offensively than we were last year or the year before, and that's not a knock, but that's just the truth. Him being able to do that's going to make it easier for guys to score. So I was really impressed by his line from a floor game standpoint. 7 assists is fantastic. I can live with him going 7 of 17. Obviously, he'll clean that up, but that I'll never. If you're doing those other things as a point guard, me personally, I can overlook him because it's so much more value. It has so much value than just putting the ball in the basket. You're getting other guys involved.
Mm-hmm.
You're creating foul pressure. Like I said, you're flattening the defense. You're forcing tags and rolls and then late closeouts. But, you know, all that stuff matters. So I was really impressed. It was a good opener for him. You know, he's just like his brother. I think a little bit faster, actually, than Andrew. He's not as tall.
It's weird watching him on the court because he looks like him.
I know. They have the same mannerisms, yeah. Too. When they come off the screens, they do the same.
Yeah.
Like, just, it's the same. It's like, geez. You know, it's kind of funny. But,
mm-hmm.
And then I thought Nolan played fantastic. You know, the 3 assists, 1 turnover was good. 7 of 18 is not the greatest, but it's not the end of the world. 1 for 8, obviously you want to bury that, but I think he's going to replace Steele as kind of our 3-point shooting threat from mm-hmm. the perimeter standpoint. Now everybody just listening is like, he went 1 for 8. I think he has a good enough stroke, and he's shown it in the past
mm-hmm.
that he can make shots. I think he just didn't make them the other night.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That happens. But we need somebody to be able to space the floor, especially, like I said, if teams are defending Graham in the way that they did, where they're sinking down with help defenders, kickouts and drive-bys are going to be more prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
And you need somebody to have a 3-point threat so you can take that away or punish defenses that do that. So I was pleased with his game. And, you know, that's the biggest thing. One of the biggest things I was looking for early, and it's going to continue, is how those two play together. And I thought they did a good job of playing well together. Like I said, 10 assists, only 2 turnovers, 5 to 1 is fantastic. Only 13 assists as a team, though. We'd like to see that in the 15 pluses, you know, 18s.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the player of the game, and he keeps getting better and better, is Braden Huff, man. Just fantastic.
Yeah.
And just 7 of 10, 19 points. How many rebounds did he have? 9.
Mm-hmm.
And he only played 20 minutes. 3 of 3 from the free throw line. Plus 16. I mean, I think he has the most skill of all the bigs. I know it's super early, but I think he's more skilled than Graham. It's not a bad thing, but Graham's mm-hmm. stronger and more of a post-up player, which you need. But I think Braden has better touch. I think Braden has his better feet. I think Graham's a better defender, a better leaper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't even know why I went to a comparison. They're both on the same team, but I think Braden gives us a three-point threat on a pick and pop that is so valuable in today's game, especially with our wave action and the spacing that we do and the dribble handoffs and the ball screen stuff. You got to have that so you take away tags and overhelping. It punishes that, or you can bring bigs away from the basket. I think he looks great every time I see him. It looks fantastic. I mean, he was great in craziness, and you always kind of roll your eyes at him. Cool, man.
Yeah.
In the first game, you're like, all right, you know, I know it's NAIA, but you're still, you know, still got to go out there and do it. And then, obviously, the season opener. So I will be curious as the year progresses if he's still productive, how many minutes is he going to get? Because I think he needs to play more than 20, but obviously Coach Fuse knows what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he needs to be in the 25s.
Yeah.
You know, 25 to 28.
Mm-hmm.
So really impressed. Gonzaga did a good job, like I said, of that 16-6, you know, getting to a five-point lead at half, which I thought was completely normal for that type of game. And I think, honestly, like it's going to be a little bit like last year. You know, obviously we go to the lead eight, but we had some ups and downs. But I thought last year was one of the more fun years for me to call because I didn't fall asleep at half the games.
Right.
I mean, as a fan, it's more fun. I don't care what anybody mm-hmm. says. I love when we were dominant, but also like half the games were like, I want to stab my eyes out because it's a 40-point game,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And let's just be honest. And some people might think that's, why wouldn't you want your team to be dominant? That's not what I'm saying, but like from a pure just basketball stance, like, oh my God, it's like watching a girls AAU game where girls AAU, there's a big discrepancy between the good and the not good.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes there's some 40 and 50s, and I've been on both sides of them. Many times, both ways. And that's what it feels like. You're like, oh my God. So I was pleased with the first half. I thought we did a good job of settling down, but I wasn't surprised being only up 5. And I make that sound like it was a failure.
Mm.
But I just really liked how we came out in the second half with, you know, more increased energy defensively. We incorporated the 30 press a little bit, which is our 1-2-2. And I think, like I said earlier, it kind of, you know, everything regressed to the mean and our talent and,
mm-hmm.
you know, superior skill and home court advantage took over and we ended up winning by 15. But that Yale team's good. I mean, and honestly, didn't they look the part?
Yeah, they did.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
solid players all around, 6'4 on the wing, two 6'4 kids. The Mahoney lefty kid was good. The Polakidis or whatever his name was good.
Yeah.
The Wolf guy, the big 7-footer, moved better and I thought he got in foul trouble, but he looked all right.
Yeah.
The big kid off the bench, Towson, that looked like a football player, was like more skilled.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, they're gonna win 20 games and they might win the Ivy League again. Like that was a good home opener win. I know people might be rolling their eyes, but like from a true basketball standpoint, not even trying to hype up Gonzaga basketball, like that's a good solid win to start the year
mm-hmm.
because we've played some really bad teams in the past.
There was some weird stat, and maybe you guys talked about this on the radio. I didn't hear it. This was like our first opener against a top 150 KenPom team.
Yeah.
Since 2003. I know KenPom didn't exist back then.
RPI.
RPI.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was like our first opener against like someone ranked in the top 150.
It makes sense.
And,
When we did that was St. Joe's in New York
in 2003. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
So I mean, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're a good basketball team, and then like I said, they look the part. They look like if you saw them, and we always call it the airport team. You know what I mean? Like if you saw them in the airport, be like, oh, that's a basketball team.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like they look the part. So I thought it was a great win for us. I'm kind of glad we got one of those where we had a shaky start and we had to, you know, have guys step up, and then the crowd was fantastic. Like that's more fun. And it was a good solid win. Eastern Oregon is tonight, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not even going to talk about that. I'm wasting our time.
It's not, I don't, is it? Is it a
It counts.
It's not an exhibition. Okay, because no, I couldn't find it on ESPN. Doesn't even list it on their app. And
I don't
so.
Think you could even bet on it or anything if you wanted to. But yeah, it's. Yeah. I'm not even talking about it. Hopefully, our guys stay healthy and we get off the court. It's just kind of a tune up for Maui. Mm-hmm. But all in all, really impressive. Braden Huff backcourt played fantastic. I thought Graham looked okay, but I think he's going to have to change his game just a hair or get deeper touches because teams are going to understand that he's a really good two dribble body bump in the post. Like, all right, well, we're coming with help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then obviously the steel injury is going to make it interesting for some of the perimeter spots, but I think Dusty will handle that well. But all in all, I was pleased. Pleased with the atmosphere. I know I've talked about it in years past, episodes past. Sometimes it's not great in there.
Yeah.
Just being honest, like it gets dead, and that's not a knock on the fans. Like sometimes the opponents are just not great and it's a blowout and
mm-hmm.
you can hear a pin drop, you know? It's
yeah.
just like, oh my God. So I thought a lot of boxes were checked, and I'm looking forward to, you know, Maui coming up, and we'll preview that in the next episode.
The Perimeter will be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Hey, Hunter Green. Did you know that card control from ICCU lets you turn off your cards with just the tap of a button? Off? On.
Trying to pay our bills.
On.
Yeah.
You got a listener question?
Yeah, I got a couple of listener questions. Okay. First one comes from Zag Cruz. Is can Nimhard and Hickman continue to play 39 plus minutes a game?
It's not ideal, but I, yeah. I have in the past. I mean, I played 40 almost. I probably played 38 a night. It's doable. And let's try to think in years previous, who's probably played a ton. Nigel probably played that many.
Totally. Yeah.
Josh Perkins probably did in that mm-hmm. in that run. I bet you Rui and BC were around that 35s.
Mm-hmm.
And from the big spot, that's a lot for Gonzaga. Usually,
yeah.
it's. You know, 28 to 32.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, it's not ideal, and I get where they're coming from. But also, I think, you know, that's what you got, and you just got to hope they don't get injured. But, like...
Yeah, I was looking at the
there's so
roster.
Many there's so many... So, when people ask me that, I need their context to the question.
Mm, yeah.
Do they mean they're going to get tired during the games?
Yeah.
Or they're going to get wore down throughout the season?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you know what I'm saying? So I think it's a little bit of both. No, I don't think they'll ever get tired during a game. There's like literally a bazillion TV timeouts. They're like every 4 minutes,
yeah.
four and a half or mm-hmm. whatever, five. So, and they're like 2 minutes long. So mm-hmm. you never get tired. Does that minutes wear on you as the season progresses? In theory, yes. But Coach Few, and I've seen it with my own eyes, he's not old school like some of these other guys, and he's stopped. You know, with us, he was, come on, you got to practice. He lets guys rest.
Mm-hmm.
They really do a good job of, you know, understanding science and data on sleep and all that stuff. Like sometimes our morning breakfast, like on the road, will be like at 11:30.
Yeah.
In the morning.
Really?
They let guys, well, they let
sleep,
guys
sleep in. Yeah.
Yeah. They let guys yeah. sleep in. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's how it's, and then they have shoot around, but you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not like they're letting guys be lazy, but they understand the science. Like guys need 10 hours or mm-hmm. 8 hours, 8 to 10 is a significant increase and whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's an issue, but it's not a bad concern.
Yeah,
if that makes sense. It's logical concern because that is a lot of minutes, and obviously it's early, but I think both those guys are obviously in great condition, and Fewey will stay off their legs during the season, during practice week.
I don't even see anyone on the roster that really would come in for them. Like,
yeah,
I mean, there's.
I think Luka could be the guy.
Luka, okay.
I think Luka really is going to be the one that, if he doesn't play this year, is going to be the one that is kind of getting the shaft. I think he's going to find a minutes. I just think he's good enough,
mm-hmm.
and I and I just, so you know, maybe that, maybe in some of the games, especially during conference when we were trying to limit minutes, maybe they, you know, you have him as a sub for Nolan or Ryan or both, mm-hmm. and you just scale their minutes back to 35 and you give him those eight to 10 mm-hmm. each or total. And that's not a bad strategy either. I just think Luka's ready to play and I think he's going to come in and like do something stupid. Now, is he going to like light the world on fire? I'm not saying that, but like you can put him in a ball screen action and he's going to throw a pocket pass or he's going to swing it. Or mm-hmm. he's going to shoot it if he's open, but he probably is not going to shoot it unless he's like into the game. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So he's going to like kind of do what you want, mm-hmm. and that's what you need in a third point guard. So yeah, but from Zag Cruz, that's a really good question because it is a legitimate, you know, thought and concern. You know, because those are heavy minutes.
Mm-hmm. Second question from Zag One Fan. Should we be worried about Ben Gregg hitting the portal after not starting this year?
Really good question. No, maybe. Yeah, I don't know, man. That's a stumper right there. I don't know. See here, the reason I say that, because I don't know. Ben's a nice kid. Mm-hmm. I've been around him. I've seen his dad. His dad's a really nice guy too as well. I've talked to his dad a couple times, running into him in the airport and had a beer with him one time in Vegas randomly.
Dad's also a coach, like,
yeah.
So he has a coach dad telling him like, this is what's happening.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I think maybe that's a really good question. I think Ben likes it here. I think he's doing a podcast. I'll give him a little free plug. So I think like there's NIL possibilities. That's why I mentioned it, mm-hmm. right? So I think he's well liked around the school.
Mm-hmm.
And he played 16 minutes.
Yeah,
it's not terrible. He had 6 points. He gets involved when he's in there. He's not just like a ball swing. They run pick and pop stuff for him.
Mm-hmm.
But that is a legitimate concern. So I'm going to plead the fifth because I don't know for sure. But like that's another, like the previous question, that's a logical thought process and something to think about where I would like to come to that question halfway through the season and where we can see his minutes.
Yeah, for sure.
Because if he's playing like 10, yeah. But if he's playing 18 to 23, then probably not. And you're mm-hmm. winning and you know what I'm saying? And you're involved. Like that's still a pretty good deal and still good to be on Gonzaga national brand and you're winning and people care. Like you can go to some of these other programs and they act like they care. They don't really, you know, the arenas aren't filled and mm-hmm. it's a football school and people really don't care. Like that's a real thing too. Like we can't discount. It's not always just about, you know, minutes played. It's like, well, do you like your teammates? Do you like the atmosphere? Mm-hmm. Is it where, you know, the Northwest is where he's from? Do you want to move? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Your parents can come to the games.
Yeah.
Or they can fly up. It's $100 ticket from Portland or whatever. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know. That's a really good question, but I think we need more data and context
Definitely.
To answer that, in my opinion.
I think there's, I mean, he's not going to break into the starting lineup, in my opinion, but he's definitely going to get his minutes.
Well, I think what they're alluding to is not starting, but not playing like heavy minutes.
Right.
But yeah. I don't know.
It's a talented roster.
It is, exactly. It is. And, you know, we've had guys transfer. I mean, Dom Harris had 23 against, I think 23 or 21 against Yale in a losing effort for LMU.
Yeah.
Talking about transfers. And I thought, and I see Hunter Silas had a good game too, like 27 or something like that for Wake Forest. So good for those kids.
Yeah.
You know, it's a real thing. Thanks for joining me on the perimeter. Thank you to our sponsors, McGilvery Environmental, Idaho Central Credit Union, and HDG Architecture. Next episode, we'll be talking about Maui. Thanks for listening.